Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene was on Tucker Carlson's show, and she said that this war in Ukraine is against Russia. This war against Russia, the Chiron below the two of them, Tucker and Margie, was all of the money spent in Ukraine could be spent here helping the American people. Putin must be smiling. On the line with us is our old buddy, the investigative reporter, Greg Palast. He's a journalist, author, filmmaker. His latest film, Vigilante, Georgia's vote suppression hitman, produced by Martin Sheen and George DiCaprio, narrated by Rosario Dawson. And you can watch it for, I believe you can watch it free over at gregpalast.com. Greg_Palast on Twitter. Greg, welcome back to the program. You've been doing a deep dive into Putin's pronouncements. I don't know if you caught it, that Medvedev just came out and said, and I quote, "This is why it's so important to achieve all the goals of the special military operation, to push back the borders that threaten our country as far as possible, even if they are the borders of Poland."
Yes. Well, by the way, greetings from Switzerland.
Thank you.
If you go to BuzzFlash or GregPalast.com for the updates, you can read the article, "Putin's Mein Kampf, an Invasion Foretold." Look, this guy wrote, you know, what we have, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian fascist, Marie Le Pen, Tucker Carlson, the rest of the gang, and a few, unfortunately, a couple of people on the left have gotten the idea that the problem here is that NATO provoked Russia and that justified, NATO's expansion provoked Russia and justified this invasion. That's complete nonsense. But the important thing is, what is the reason? Putin actually wrote a 6,800-word essay, a monster, on why he was going to seize and take over all of Ukraine. And it's a he put that out in June of 2021. We should have been ready for this because he did it all. And there's not one single mention of NATO. There's only a slight mention of NATO, positive, believe it or not. So what's going on here? What's going on, Putin is trying to become Putin the Great, not restore the Soviet Union, but to restore an imaginary empire that was founded in the 10th century called the Kievan Rus Empire, and that Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus are one great and single Slavic nation. The problem was it didn't happen. Moscow was just a tiny...
Greg, your audio is coming and going. I don't know if there's anything you can do on your end to fix
that. Okay, can you hear this now?
Yes, I can. Okay. Just let me recap what we missed and what I think you were saying, which is that Putin has been saying that Ukraine and Russia are all part of one ancient Slavic empire going back to the 10th century, but in fact that was not Slavic. It was the Norwegians and the Swedes who controlled that territory, and pick it up from there, if I have that right.
Yeah, so he has this fever dream of history, that there was this great Slavic empire and that it was a crime that Ukraine was taken away from the Ruski Mir, the Russian world. And by the way, he doesn't blame NATO. He blames the Bolsheviks. He blames Lenin and the rest because, you know, Ukraine has never, ever in history been a part of Russia. That's a complete misunderstanding that Putin has been very successful in selling. In fact, the Bolsheviks and the always recognized the independent nation of Ukraine, and it had its own seat since the founding of the United Nations. And so there was no such thing. But he wants to recreate this single nation, become Vlad the Great.
Yeah.
And he explains that in this 21-page essay. Are you still hearing me?
I am, and spot on. And I've been saying on this program for months now that he's basically trying to become Catherine the Great. You know, now I'm no student of Russian history. Apparently, you have become one here. And
yes.
Is that what's going on? I mean, he's looking back at the people who consolidated empire and thinking that this is his legacy before he... I mean, the guy's 70 years old. He seems to have health problems. This is the world he wants to leave.
Well, but it's not just any world. It's not just creating a larger Russian Slavic empire that had never existed. The second Asus Belli, the second reason for invading Ukraine, is to restore the supremacy of the Muscovite Russian Orthodox Church. You have to understand there's a schism. The Ukrainian Orthodox Church is split away. And of course, you've got the Greeks, and he's no friend of the Catholics or Muslims either. So he has decided that his main aim is to restore the power of Kirill, who is the source of his own political power. Putin is nothing without the patriarch Kirill in Moscow. And Kirill has lost grip of Ukraine. So the idea is to bring back Russian values and the Russian Orthodox Church values. And he is not concerned about cruise missiles from Poland. He's not concerned. What he's concerned about is homosexuals from NATO. That's one of the big things. If you read his writings, it's all about the under traditional Russian family. Kirill is absolutely overwhelmed, as is Putin. They're completely absorbed with the idea that that there is this transgender mixing of sexes in the West, which is poisoning and undermining the traditional Russian culture. And wow. That's what he's very concerned about. He's a religious man, and he's really very much the handmaiden. He is not the power in Russia. Kirill, the head of the Orthodox Church there, is, and the split away of the Ukrainians, not only religiously, but culturally, is a threat.
Yeah,
and that's the threat that they are trying to crush.
I think most Americans have no idea that there's, completely separate from Catholicism, there are these little Orthodox churches around the world that are kind of their own little separate universes with their own equivalents of a papacy. You got the Greek Orthodox Church, you've got the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, you've got the Russian Orthodox Church, you've got the Egyptian Orthodox Church called the Coptics, that I'm very familiar with.
You're a minister, I understand.
I was, back in the 70s. Yes. And so you've got these kind of dueling Orthodox churches, and the Russian Orthodox Church thinks that they should control the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, and there was a lot of kind of mixing for a while there, and now the Ukrainian Orthodox Church is saying, no, we're our own thing.
Right.
And Kirill is like, what was the name of the guy who was the Romanov family's religious advisor? It was Rasputin, wasn't it? Yeah, I think Kirill
is Rasputin. Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But
Kirill
very
is like
important.
Rasputin. He's whispering in the ear of the emperor, essentially.
Well, understand that Putin has no power without Kirill.
Without Kirill. Kirill is the guy who controls the
churches.
Okay.
So what's important here, very important to understand, is I'm stunned at even members who are concerned about pronouns. And in Russia, there is a pogrom against LGBT community, and they are very concerned that this Western poison is coming through Ukraine into Russia. And that's all laid out in Putin's long essays. This is very, very important. You have to understand that they see this as a cultural attack on Russia. It's not a military attack. They're not concerned about, again, the cruise missiles. As you know, they had signed, you know, that's the latest thing of NATO moving in. In fact, they're more concerned about losing the resources. In Putin's essay, he has no objection to NATO. His objection is to Ukraine joining the European Union, where he will lose Ukraine's resources. He makes that explicit. So understand, this is about creating a single Russia-controlled pseudo-Slavic nation, which will also have at its core control by the Muscovite patriarch Kirill. And that's at the center of it. And so it has nothing to do, it really has nothing to do with the expanded
right.
And that has never been.
And a large part of it is his campaign against gay and lesbians, and in particular against trans people. And in that regard, maybe that accounts for why Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tucker Carlson are promoting Putin's propaganda on Fox News. It's all about, you know, hating on the queer community.
Right. And that's a core issue. And it is not about NATO expansion. In fact, in his 7,000 word essay, he doesn't mention NATO expansion a single time as a threat to Russia.
Right.
There is no this is something he picked up actually from the fascists in the West, like Le Pen and Berlusconi.
Right. And this was
so again, if you want to read
invasion.
The full story about I call it his Mein Kampf.
Right. And this was published a whole year before
he put
his
it out
invasion.
In June 2021.
Right.
And he made it very clear that unless this was handled, he was going to take over Ukraine. It's right in there.
Yeah.
You know, he says the once and future single Ruski Mir empire.
Right.
Which he was going to restore. And the purpose of the restoration was for restoring this spiritual cleanliness and especially removing the threat of what he calls the satanic mixing of the genders.
Wow. Wow. This is just absolutely breathtaking. And everybody should read this. I mean, you know, and you can find Greg's piece over at buzzflash.com right now. Presumably at gregpalace.com, Greg?
It's up at gregpalace.com. I say anyone that wants to talk about what's happening in Russia should stop talking about expansion NATO and read Putin's own words, his own Mein Kampf.
There you go. Amen. Thank you, Greg. Thank you so much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Juanita in Prosser, Washington. Hey, Juanita, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV.
I cannot believe that China was standing with Russia, but there again, they claim, you know, a country needs to keep their territorial integrity.
It's not that. It's
that.
Autocracy versus democracy. Both
right.
President Xi and President Putin are afraid of democracy. They both know that if all of the people of their respective countries could vote in free and fair elections, they'd be out on their keisters.
Right. But I listened to those that sided with Ukraine and Germany. I almost got up and went, hurrah for Germany.
Yeah.
Really stood up. But they, I think it was China, talked about a nuclear war. I'm thinking, where is Ukraine going to get any nuclear weapons?
Well, they gave them all back to Russia. That was part of the Budapest Accords in exchange
right.
for Russia recognizing
okay.
their borders.
Right, but what I'm trying to say is, if Russia's got the nuclear weapons, not the Ukraine.
Right. Yeah. Excellent point, Juanita. Thank you very much for calling and making it. Jonathan in Portland. Hey, Jonathan, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. As usual, Greg Palast is always really interesting, and I went to his article, and he had a link to Putin's 21-page
manifesto
speech.
Yeah.
And, you know, while he does mention NATO in the speech, actually, he does point out his concern about the exploitation of resources, which is what Brzezinski talks about decades earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really interesting. But what I found really strange when I kind of tooled around, this is basically on the Kremlin's website. They're now referring to Russia as the fatherland, which I thought was really strange. I've always heard Russia referred to as a motherland.
Yeah, it used to be the motherland. Now, well, that's interesting, because Hitler did the same thing.
Exactly. That was my first thought.
It was Der Vaterland.
So it was,
yeah.
Yeah. But it's a very interesting website on the Kremlin and the Kremlin's website. And so I don't know, but that was all.
Where'd you find Greg's article? Was it gregpalace.com or over at BuzzFlash?
It's on his website, gregpalace.com, and it's the first article. And you click on, there's a link to this article
to Putin's
that
rant.
Putin wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he does mention NATO, but he also is concerned about exploitation of resources. And Russia's never had the money to exploit it. So their strategy is basically to keep everyone else from exploiting it.
Well, yeah, and Ukraine is sitting on some of the most fertile soil in all of Europe and massive shale oil reserves. So, you know, Jonathan, I got to run, but thank you. Thank you. That was fascinating. Thank you. David in Las Vegas. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to share with you guys something I heard on The Telegraph on YouTube out of London 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They had a person on who was talking about how Stalin had co-opted the Russian Orthodox Church and how Putin had sort of carried that on.
Yep.
And then they were giving an example. There was a bishop recently in the Russian Orthodox Church was, you know, doing a sermon telling young Russian guys to, hey, instead of choking, you know, vomiting on your vodka bottles, why don't you go to Ukraine and die for your country and then you'll be redeemed.
Yeah, Greg Palace was talking about this. This is a very real problem or very real, you know, this is a very real strategy that Putin is using. He's religiousizing the war. His original sales pitch was that Ukraine wasn't a separate country, that it was part of Russia. In the last few months, he's changed his sales pitch to embrace American Republicans, and it appears to be working. You've got a bunch of Republicans now who are pro-Putin because he said that he's fighting Ukraine because Ukraine is a vanguard of infiltrating homosexuality and gay marriage into Russia, and God forbid that happen. It's mind-boggling. David, thanks. Thanks for pointing that out. It's a good one. Just a couple of quick news hits here. The Joe Biden's plan to forgive $10,000 to $20,000 per student, depending on their income.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Of student loan debt has been enjoined by a lawsuit from, I think it's about two dozen Republican states. I believe it's the state's attorneys general who are doing this, who are running this lawsuit. The Republican State Attorneys General Association has become a huge political organization, well-funded by right-wing billionaires. And they brought this case before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is hearing arguments on it. And the Republicans are saying that it's wrong for the government to help students out with their debt. And, of course, the Biden administration is saying, you know, we have every right to do this. In fact, you know, we really probably there shouldn't have been student debt in the first place. We should be like every other democracy in the world and let, you know, young people go to college for free or close to it, you know, at an affordable cost, like the United States was up until the Reagan administration. Reagan, of course, ended college in California, in University of California system, the entire system, which was one of the top colleges in the world, was entirely free, 100% free. Back in the 60s, I had a bunch of friends in Michigan who now live in California, have, you know, ever since the 60s, because they moved out there to go to college for free. And that was just to avoid, you know, $250 a month in or a quarter in tuition at MSU. But anyhow, so that's before the Supreme Court. Keep an eye on that case. Based on the kinds of questions the members of the court are asking, you might have a sense of how they're going to rule. It's going to be fascinating, number one. And number two, you know, you had this special Fawnie Willis in Georgia, the district attorney for Fulton County, Georgia, which is, you know, large, most of metro Atlanta. She pull together a special investigative grand jury. It was a grand jury that does not have the power to indict. It did have the power to subpoena witnesses and to compel testimony, but they did not have the power to indict. And so it could merely make recommendations. And the foreperson of that jury, a young woman who, according to Republican websites and blogs and whatnot, you know, has like a Facebook page with New Age stuff on it. Oh, my God. She has revealed to multiple media outlets that they recommended to District Attorney Willis that multiple, at least a dozen people be indicted for crimes, including Donald Trump, around the efforts to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia. There's been a lot of hand-wringing about that and concern that she might have blown the thing up if an indictment actually happens. I think that's misplaced. The judge has come out and said that she didn't say anything that was beyond his grand jury instructions. But the important thing is that that grand jury did not have the power to indict. A regular grand jury does have the power to indict. And a new one is being impaneled as we speak in Atlanta for Fani Willis, for Fulton County. And the evidence that was gathered by the special grand jury will now be presented to the regular grand jury, the indicting grand jury, to decide or to actually make indictments. And that could come down anytime this week. I would be astonished if it came down today, because it's going to take quite a while. It's probably going to take a couple days to present the information. It's going to take a couple days for the grand jury to digest it. They may want to call in a few additional witnesses. I mean, this could take a few weeks. But many of the legal commentators who are, you know, very much on top of this stuff are speculating that we'll probably know by Friday of this week. So I just wanted to put those things on your radar screen. I think they're really worth paying attention to. And let's pick up some of your phone calls here. David in San Francisco. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Well, hi, Tom. You were talking about the education deferments in front of the Supreme Court. If you just, like a true conservative, would find that an educated population is a good investment, right?
You would think.
Yeah, and that, like you're saying, free education, available in education, is a very important investment. Okay. And so to actually stifle colleges, you know, if all of a sudden these deferments get cut, then all of a sudden a whole bunch of the population is trapped and trapped into onerous debt.
Or at least
now,
another 10,000.
Conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a true conservative would certainly be interested in onerous debt and the future ability for a nation to hang together if it's saddled with onerous debt. So is this a true conservative Supreme Court? If they're even asking questions about whether or not it's a good idea to keep a nation trapped in stifling education and onerous debt.
Yeah, no, it's not a true conservative court. It's a bunch of Republican hacks. Hey, come on.
Corporate.
David.
I usually say it corporate state hacks, but yeah. Well, the other thing, too, and you, since you're on in Chicago, WCPT Greens, the Chicago train yards are, you know, that's got to be one of the biggest links that Norfolk Southern has. Now, if they were to demand performance bonds from Norfolk Southern, if they've got 700 derailments last year alone, and they've got this one where they're playing it on the cheap, what's Chicago look forward to with Norfolk Southern?
Or any other railroad. I mean, they're not that much of an outlier. Performance bonds, by the way, for people who don't know what we're talking about, and correct me if I have this wrong, David, are where the agency puts up essentially money or an insurance policy that or the equivalent of it that says if we fail to perform, then you get to keep this money or we have to pay you this money. And the performance in this case would be safely transporting goods, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Much less the cost of dealing with a gas explosion in downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, it's bad enough out in the country where it's going to poison a city a couple of hundred miles away. But in downtown Chicago, one of the largest cities in America, they better have some performance bonds like this afternoon.
Yeah, you would think. I don't think that they do. Now, by the way, you mentioned Chicago. Chicago's having an election for their mayor. This is the, you know, keep an eye on this, too. This is going to be fascinating. I am no expert on Chicago politics, so I'm going to stop right there. But I, you know, I think it's fascinating. And I have been a fan of Lori Lightfoot, but, you know, we'll see where this goes. David, you raised some really interesting questions. I think we've been corrupted by big money. Our government is being corrupted by big money, and it's happening because the U.S. Supreme Court legalized it after Congress repeatedly made it criminal. And those laws, over 1,000 laws regulating money in government, have been struck down by the Supreme Court since 1976, you know, for both federal and state. Say what?
A true conservative would look at government is run as a nonprofit. You know, the cost of getting the dam built or the bridge built or the libraries running without roofs leaking, it's the true costs rather than making a profit on it.
Yeah, I don't.
And the idea that the Supreme Court is trapped for years in this idea that government, like a business, has any kind of logic to it, that's guaranteeing that you're going to hate the government if it's being run as a business.
Well, that's the goal. I mean, if you're a right-wing billionaire and you don't want to pay taxes that might, you know, help educate poor people's kids or pay for roads for poor people's neighborhoods or working class people's neighborhoods, then, you know, of course you want people to hate and tear down government, which is really the tragedy that, you know, that, like I said, the Supreme Court has empowered. David, thank you for the call and then, you know, thoughtful commentary there. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. Hey, there was something I was actually thinking about on this topic, but they were referring to these Republicans wanting to send, you know, F-16s to Ukraine. You know, there's some Republicans that are, you know, quite hawkish, I guess.
Yes.
At least that's how they're presenting themselves. You know, they want to do even more. They say the Biden administration's not doing enough. And it got me thinking about militant or militaristic Christianity in general and political Christianity. Mm-hmm. These aspects are on the rise in Russia, actually.
Yeah.
Now, this is not surprising, you know, because, you know, I saw it in our military. It didn't get reported on very much, but I saw people starting to do rather irrational things, and their justification was some sort of religious bent. You know, I correlated it to the ambiguity in Afghanistan, right? People really didn't understand why their friends were dying. They really didn't understand it. You know, and we saw it with, remember, old Bergdahl. You know, he said that's why he left, because he didn't understand what was going on there. Okay. So my question is this. Have you considered at all the ramifications of this militaristic Christianity rising in two nuclear powers like Russia and the United States?
Putin is stoking it. I mean, his speech on Tuesday last week, his speech specifically said that he had to attack Ukraine because the Ukrainians were collaborating with Americans to promote homosexuality and same-sex marriage in Russia. And this is a corrosive poison that he would not tolerate in his country. I mean, those are not verbatim quotes, but they're damn close.
Yeah, no.
Reading his speech. And Greg Palast got me started reading Putin's speeches, and now it's like, I can't stop. It's like, whoa, really? He said that?
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Dave, I got to run, but thanks for the call. George in Cripple Creek, Virginia. Hey, George, how are you today? What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing? Yeah, interesting talk with your guest, Palace, but, you know, Dmitry Medvedev is threatening to, you know, rearrange Poland's border with Ukraine. Well, perhaps you ought to look back on 1920 when Lenin, Stalin, and Trotsky sent the so-called 100,000-man Invincible Red Army to liquidate Poland, as Stalin put it, but the Poles completely routed the Red Army and sent it back to rattling back to Mother Russia.
Really? I had no idea about that history, George. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and then, you know, another interesting side, like, you know, Putin's first name, Vladimir, in Russian has interesting meaning. Vladi is the imperative of the Russian word to verb to rule, and Mir is the world, so you think he's taking his first name too literally?
So his name literally means the man who rules the world?
Yeah, Vladi is to rule and mirror the world.
Wow. I think he is. Yeah, I think he is.
Take his first name too literally.
That's fascinating. Now, George,
I think he's going to have a come up, and like I say, you know, Yeah. Well, if he tried anything, Poland was fighting completely alone in 1920, but now they'd have the whole of NATO behind them.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing in 1939 as well. So I'm curious, George, you know, when you first started calling into the program, you identified yourself as a conservative, and I kind of made a mental note that you were a reasonable guy and, you know, always take your calls.
I'm not like DeSantis.
No, I get it. I totally get it. But as a conservative, I'm assuming you have friends who are Republicans and conservatives. I'm just curious how, you know, how is this Marjorie Taylor Greene going on Tucker Carlson and saying, I mean, it was frankly bonkers.
You mean the national divorce?
Well, no. She went on there, and I'm looking for the YouTubes here. The first one is there's a chyron under the two of them that says another $10 billion for the Ukrainian pimp. And Tucker Carlson refers to Zelensky as a pimp.
And then
the other one is that there's this chyron at the bottom during their interview that says all of the money spent in Ukraine could be spent here helping the American people. Is this a growing thing with Republicans taking Putin's side? I never thought I would live to, I mean, you know, my father was, you know, fanatically anti-Soviet, you know, a good Eisenhower Republican. I never thought I'd live to see the day that Republicans were supporting, you know, an autocratic Russia.
Yeah, me either. I spent 3 years in the Army and 20-some-odd years with no such agent, otherwise known as NSA, you know, fighting the Bolsheviks and monitoring Russian military communications, and I never side with anybody like Putin.
Yeah, yeah. But are your friends starting to change their opinions? I mean, is this Tucker Carlson pro-Putin crusade starting to have an effect among Republicans?
Not that I know. Yeah, I live, you know, we have a total of about 33 people here in Cripple Creek. So
okay.
I was talking with other people is kind of limited, but no, none of them are falling for that as far as I know.
I was just curious. George, always nice to hear from you. Thank you so much for the call.
Stay here. Keep it up, Tom.
Good talking to you. Thank you. Ken in Sheridan, Colorado. Hey, Ken, it says you disagree with me about what?
So anyway, I want to hit you on the student loan relief and how it will only hurt the working poor.
Okay. Tell
me. It comes down to the fact that nobody is paid a salary or a wage, not net, not gross. They're paid a perceived and expected standard of living. And if they're living in a standard of living right now that pays off the student loans, they will work for a esteemed standard of living without the student loans. And the 1% are going to kick off inflation and recession until they weed out that money. And the only people that will take it on the chin are the working poor.
That doesn't make any sense to me. How does diminishing the average student debt in the United States is around $45,000-$50,000. How does diminishing that by $10,000 kick off inflation that hurts working poor people?
Because they're working for a standard of living.
I don't think most people work for a standard of living. Most people work for the wages that are available to them. I mean, somebody who's working at 7-Eleven would love to have a standard of living where they can afford to, you know, buy a larger house and a brand new car, but they're not going to do it because the wage is not available to them.
And the reason is because you're paid a perceived standard of living.
No, you're paid what your employer believes the market defines as appropriate pay for that particular work. I mean, this is a marketplace issue. Ken, thanks. I don't follow your logic. Maybe I'm missing something. It happens from time to time, but it just doesn't make sense to me. We'll be right back. And welcome back. So my op-ed today over at HartmanReport.com is kind of a follow-up on the conversation that Greg Pallas and I had. And its headline is titled, Did Godless Gays Cause the Ukrainian War? Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Is Putin right? One of the main points of my article is that there's already an agreement about the status of Ukraine. It's called the Budapest Memorandum. And, you know, it was signed in 1994. Ukraine at that point in time had the third largest stash of nuclear weapons in the world. They were all left over from when Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. Ukraine is a huge country. It's the size of Texas. It's massive. It's literally the largest country in Europe. And they had all these nuclear weapons, most of them pointed at the United States and European capitals, mostly the United States and London. And so the United States, the United Kingdom, Russia, and Ukraine got together and negotiated this deal where the United States would put in $3 billion to help decommission these nuclear weapons and reimburse essentially Ukraine for the expenses associated with it. The Russia, the UK, and the US collectively would put up another $3 billion for this process. Russia would pick up the expense of coming into Ukraine, picking up it was about 1,900 nuclear warheads, picking up 1,900 nuclear bombs, transporting them back to Russia, decommissioning them or doing whatever they want with that, whatever they did with them. And that in exchange for Ukraine giving up all of the nuclear weapons that they had, which could have been a deterrent against Russian aggression, in exchange for doing that, Ukraine got a solid, sworn, written commitment from the United States, the United Kingdom, and Russia that Ukraine's borders would be respected, and if any country ever invaded Ukraine, those three countries would come to their defense. It was like a mini NATO. So the history of this thing is I mean, the backstory of how we got here in the second year of this brutal terrorist war against Ukraine by Russia is absolutely fascinating. And I trace it in the article. By going back to Putin's own statements, speeches, and writings. Back in 2008, he was talking to George W. Bush. And he said, and I quote, this was at a NATO meeting in Bucharest. He said, quote, "You don't understand, George, that Ukraine is not even a state. What is Ukraine? Part of its territory is Eastern Europe, but the greater part is a gift from us." George Bush didn't respond to that. He just kind of brushed it off. 13 years later, in July of 2021, this was 7 months before Putin invaded Ukraine on February 24th, 2022. So 7 months before the invasion. He doubles down on this argument that Ukraine is not a real country. He published this 21-page screed on the Kremlin's website. You can still read it there, in which he basically said, I'll quote him. He said, "I said that Russians and Ukrainians were one people, a single whole. It is what I have said on numerous occasions and what I firmly believe." And then he goes on to talk about how the separation between Ukraine and Russia, which would be, you know, Ukraine becoming a democratic country, Russia becoming an autocratic country. But he blames it on us. He says, first of all, I'd like to emphasize that the wall that has emerged in recent years between Russia and Ukraine, between what is essentially the same historical and spiritual space, is, to my mind, is our great common misfortune and tragedy. But these are also the result of deliberate efforts by those forces that have always sought to undermine our unity. So right up until a month or so ago, his main argument was, you know, Ukraine's not really a country. Now he's got a new argument. Ukraine is the conduit for pedophilia and gay marriage coming into Russia. And he's got to bomb Ukraine and kill all these civilians in order to stop gay marriage from coming to Russia. I'm not making this up. You can read it all at HartmanReport.com. Jacob in Portland. Hey, Jacob, thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. What's on your mind today?
Oh, thank you. I listened to the Budapest, kind of the history that you were given earlier, the Budapest Amendment or the
Accords
Memorandum.
Memorandum, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I love hearing the history of the stuff like that. And it's going to roll right into the question I had. But how does the Minsk agreement and the Minsk II protocols filter into this scenario, though? And then ultimately, my question being, you know, we spent $120 billion arming Ukraine, and East Palestinians were told to go back to their home.
Yeah, well.
Why haven't they done anything?
I don't think, it's a great Republican talking point, Jacob, and you get points for that.
I'm not a Republican, though.
Well, you're doing a great job with the talking points, trying to conflate, Palestine.
Hang on. And I do blame Donald Trump. I totally blame Donald Trump for the derailment.
Yeah.
But the rail union workers tried to strike for the safety things, and Biden administration stopped that strike.
Well, he also gave them most of what they wanted. They didn't get the sick pay that they wanted, but they got several $1,000 a year in pay increases, and they got some safety increases. We had the president of the union, the rail union, on this program, Jacob. But, the Minsk agreements do not give Russia the permission to start bombing Ukraine. There's nothing in Minsk 1 or Minsk 2 that says Russia can start bombing or invading Ukraine. Nothing. Anywhere. Period.
Well, according to UN statistics, there were 15,000 civilians killed during those times.
This is not about statistics. You are asking about the agreements, and the agreements are unambiguous. They do not give Russia the permission to take another country. It's just they just don't have it. So, thanks a lot for the call. Good try. Gregory in Ventura. Hey, Gregory, what's on your mind today?
Hey, hi, Tom. It's been a while. Well, I just wanted to I'll proceed quickly. I attended University of California, Berkeley. I was a freshman in 1964 at Cal from 64 to 66, then finished up at UCLA with a degree in 68 in film. In 64, it was $84 a semester for California residents. My friends who were from out of state, it was $750. But $84, then was low, but I don't know what that would convert to today.
It would be, you can pretty much, if you're trying to translate dollars from the 1960s to today, you can pretty much just add one zero to the end. Like my dad bought a house and, for $15,000, and it's now worth about $90,000, but he bought that in the 50s, actually. More or less, add a zero. So, $84 would have been $850, more or less.
Gotcha. So I just wanted to let you know, it wasn't free, but it was kind of like free because it wasn't, I come from a fairly well-to-do family. I mean, not super, super rich or anything, but like middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And so the $84 and being a California resident was quite reasonable and no problem if you had the proper grades and SAT minimum score. They actually had to accept you, to the University of California.
Yeah, and it didn't take long to establish residence, by the way. My friends who were moving out there, I think it was 3 months, I recall right.
Yeah. I'm a native Angeleno. I was born in California. But a lot of people have come to California. But it was almost free, but it wasn't totally free.
Yeah, okay. Point made. Thank you, Gregory. Appreciate the call. Paul in Ambler, Pennsylvania. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk about what's become more apparent, at least to me in the Philadelphia region where I live, is the extent of the distinction between the Ukrainian people and Russia. City of Philadelphia has an enormous cathedral. It's a Ukrainian Catholic Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception, and they've been profiling a lot of the Ukrainian community in the local news media because of their enormous presence. And when I was growing up, I would see this cathedral. It's enormous. Yeah. It has a gold dome. You can't miss it. It's modeled
after. Are you sure it's not Ukrainian Orthodox? You said Catholic.
That's the whole point of this conversation, Tom.
Okay.
There are also Ukrainian Orthodox. Now, they are in the vast majority of the Ukrainians.
Right.
But they also are distinct. Now, the Ukrainian Catholics are in communion with the Roman Catholic Church. They recognize the Pope as the spiritual authority.
Right.
Now, this is a key thing. The Ukrainian Orthodox just broke about 5 years ago from the spiritual authority of the Russian Orthodox Church.
That's correct.
They went through the whole rigmarole of whatever the Orthodox theologians have to go through to break with the Metropolitan of Moscow, which is sort of like the Pope of the Russian Orthodox Church.
Right.
They didn't want to be under their thumb.
Which is why Mr. Kirill, so, you know, Putin's advisor, is going insane. And that was, by the way, in 2021, Putin's 21-page screed that is, you can see it, it's still published over on the Kremlin's website. I'll probably be talking about this in more detail tomorrow. In that screed where he's claiming there's no Ukrainian country, you know, that it's all part of Russia. He also goes into a lengthy thing about how the Ukrainian church is really just part of the Church of Russia, the Orthodox Russian Church.
Well, it is not anymore. The Orthodox people have broke with them. The Catholics are obviously not. And again, in Philadelphia, they've been here, especially the Catholics, since the 1880s. In my neighborhood, we had a Ukrainian credit union. And when I grew up and got married, I thought, well, I'm going to support a credit union. I tried to join, and they said, I'm sorry, you have to be Ukrainian. So when it comes to having a unique, distinct cultural identity, the Ukrainian people have one. And it's only come to the foreground in Ukraine since the fall of the Berlin Wall. They weren't allowed to really promote their language. Obviously, the religion was out the window. Back then, more than half the people didn't associate with either of the churches. But now that they can, they're in the Catholic Church. They're distinct from the Russian Orthodox Church. And even their cuisine, they have Ukrainian chefs on the TV. And they're everyone's trying to promote some solidarity with the Ukrainian people. They just had a huge march over the weekend up to the Philadelphia Art Museum steps. That's where Rocky ran up.
That's great.
If you want to have a protest and you want cameras, go to the Rocky steps. You'll get paid attention to.
Right.
So this whole notion that culturally, these are just a bunch of, you know, lost tribe of Russians that just have a slightly different accent on a word here or there.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're completely different, and they have been for a long time.
Ukraine pre-existed Russia. 882 was the year that Oleg, who was Swedish, ironically, became the first king of Kyiv. And there was no Russia at that point in time. So Ukraine preceded Russia.
And the other thing, that the fact that they're worried about the Nazis in the Ukraine. Let me ask you something. Are there any Nazis still in Germany? Are there any fascists still in Italy? Why would Putin build two Nord Stream pipelines of natural gas to feed the Nazis of Germany? Why aren't they worried about those Nazis?
Yeah.
Why aren't they worried about Romania and Hungary, who were Axis powers?
Yeah.
They were fighting the Allies.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, you know, and now the Nazis in America are all joining hands with Putin. You know, I mean, you've got this coalition of the hard right.
A complete lie.
Yeah, and I mean, now that Putin has changed his tune, now, you know, now that his official line about why he has to take down Ukraine now is because Ukraine is promoting homosexuality and same-sex marriage and trans people. This was his speech last Tuesday, and the Republicans are loving it. I mean, they're starting to fall into line. They're starting to oh, yeah, Putin, yeah, we're with him. You know, let's all hate on the gays. We're seeing this weird collection of tankies on the left and Nazis on the right all throwing in with Putin against a democracy, a pluralistic democracy in Ukraine. It's insane. Paul, I need to move along to the next caller, but thank you for the call. That fascinating stuff about what's going on in Philadelphia. I do appreciate it. Carl in Seattle. Hey, Carl, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Great show as usual.
Thank you.
Greg Palast, that when you guys talk, there is a lot of stuff in Russia that people don't know. The Orthodox Church there has a church there, and they actually have a particular church that blesses all the weapons in the military.
You know, we did this here in the United States in World War II.
Yeah.
It's not quite that wacky.
It's crazy. I mean, we don't bless war. I mean, I'm sorry.
The Bible's full of wars. God endorsed every single one of them.
Right. And also I wanted to comment is that a lot of the money that they send to these churches, that's where a lot of the propaganda is. in order for a lot of the poor people in Russia, they have to go to the churches to get their money and food and stuff. And in the meantime, they're told all these lies about war. I mean, it's really sad. You know, I don't pay much attention to a lot of things, but when there's a war going on, pay a lot of attention. And this whole Russian thing is, I think it's going to get out of hand real quick. So
I'm concerned about that too, but you know, I think the best way to stop it from getting out of hand is to put an end to the war. And that is to stop Putin from bombing Ukraine. I mean, the day that Putin stops bombing Ukraine, the war is over. It's that simple. The day that Ukraine stops fighting back, Ukraine is over, and that's unacceptable. So, you know, if you're going to stop Putin, you've got to prove to him that there's no way he can win and that it's going to hurt him more to continue. And in my opinion, that means more support for what's going on there. Carl, I got to run, but thank you for the call.
We need to stop that war.
Yeah, good talking to you. Thank you. In addition to bringing you the Tom Hartman program here on Free Speech TV and Video Media Online, we also have a whole set of ways you can interact with us and tools you can use to spread the word about the importance of democracy.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Democracy and the threats to it in our republic. First, there's your daily homework. Sue Nethercutt puts together a daily email newsletter that has a link to every story I discuss on the air, so you can find my sources and you can share them with your friends. It's free and you can sign up at TomHartman.com. Second, I publish my daily take every day over at the HartmanReport.com website. That's also free if you want the daily 5 days a week rant in your inbox. No ads either. So check them all out at TomHartman.com and HartmanReport.com. Mark in Portland. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. You know, you were mentioning before about the student loan debt that's being challenged by the Republican lawyers across many states. I mean, there's one central question that this affects both this case and the other case revolving the birth control pill or the abortion pill that's going to be challenged in court also. What is the injury? You know, that is the basic tenet question. And I think in terms of the litmus test of who is being injured by this is really critical in terms of because, A, Republican lawyers, are they really being injured? Or who are they representing that's being injured by challenging Biden's student loan forgiveness?
That's a good question. What is the tort here? What do you have any idea what the injury is that they're claiming as the basis for their lawsuit? I don't.
I have no idea. I mean, it's never been explicit. I mean, and the same with the birth control or the abortion pill.
Yeah, the abortion pill.
Because it's been on the market for 20 years, has there been any case study that this has been adversarial to women?
In fact, there's a massive body of evidence that suggests that more people die every year in the United States as a percentage of people who take the drug from Tylenol than die or are injured by mifepristone. It's actually safer than Tylenol. Now that said, I mean, Tylenol is not the safest over-the-counter drug out there. If you mix it with alcohol, you do serious damage to your liver. But mifepristone has a great track record. Great question, Mark. I don't know the answer. If anybody does, please give us a shout. Mark, thank you for that. And I'll get back to your calls in a minute or two here, but I passed over a story that I was going to share with you, and that has to do with Scott Adams, the guy who created the Dilbert comics. I always enjoyed reading Dilbert. I mean, you know, Scott Adams has got a dry wit to him. But apparently we've known for some time that he was a little weird, or at least for a couple of years, 3 years. Back in 2020, he had a TV show. It was an animated primetime TV series called Dilbert. And when the network, UPN was the network, when they canceled the show because of low ratings, by the way, Scott tweeted, quote, "I lost my TV show for being white when UPN decided it would focus on an African-American audience. That is the third job I lost for being white." And in reality, as I said, you know, the show was canceled because it had crappy ratings. But Scott Adams went on this rant last Wednesday on his YouTube show, Real Coffee with Scott Adams. And I think that, you know, the depth, the dimensionality of what he said has not been adequately reported in the media. And I just wanted to share it with you. And Dean Obadala is my colleague, and my colleague at SiriusXM. We're often on each other's shows. He's on Sirius Channel 127 here, the Progress Channel. He's on in the evening from 6 to 9 p.m., as I recall, Eastern Time. And there was this poll done by Rasmussen. Now, Rasmussen is the MAGA-aligned, Trump-aligned Republican polling organization, and they did a poll asking black people if they agreed with the statement, "It's okay to be white." Now, a lot of black people immediately recognized that as a slogan from the white racists. This has been a slogan from the neo-Nazis and white supremacists in the United States for about two decades. It's okay to be white. It's literally a meme, a trope, it's something that they use to troll people of color with. And so many of the black Americans that Rasmussen surveyed said, "No, I don't agree with that. That's a racist statement." But 53% agreed. Well, Scott Adams went nuts discovering that 47% of African Americans didn't agree with the statement, "It's okay to be white." And he goes on YouTube and he says, "If nearly half of all blacks are not okay with white people," which, by the way, is not what they said. He says, "That's a hate group. I don't want to have anything to do with them." Oh, black Americans are a hate group. How about that? Fascinating. He then goes on to say, "I don't think it makes any sense as a white citizen of America to try to help black citizens anymore. There's no longer a rational impulse. So I'm going to back off on being helpful to black Americans because it doesn't seem like it pays off." And then he goes on to say, "We need segregation now, segregation then, segregation forever," whatever George Wallace's famous saying is. He basically says, and I quote, "I would say, based on the current way things are going, the best advice I would give to white people is get the hell away from black people. Just get the F away, because there is no fixing this." He went on to say, "I'm really sick of seeing video after video of black Americans beating up non-black Americans." He says, "I see it every damn day, some black person beating the crap out of some white person." Really? This, again, is the kind of stuff, excrement, that comes out of these neo-Nazi platforms. The reality is most of the crimes against white people in America are committed by white people. Most of the crimes against black people in America are committed by black people. And black people do not disproportionately target white people any more than, well, actually, the other way around. Actually, white people do target black people. But, you know, Scott, this is what he was ranting about. And now that he has been canceled from hundreds of newspapers across the country, including ours here in Oregon, the Oregonian, and good on them, now he's claiming that he's the victim of cancel culture. And I just want to be on the record agreeing with my buddy Dean Obadala. This is not cancel culture. This is accountability culture. Scott Adams is being held accountable for his racist remarks. It's just that simple. And to have anybody, and by the way, he's whining about his loss of income. The guy's worth $75 million. I mean, maybe it's time to just retire. Go live on a cruise ship. Get the hell away from the rest of us. Let me know what ship you're on so I can avoid it. Patrick in Marietta, Georgia. Hey, Patrick, you're in, that's not Marjorie Taylor Greene's district, is it?
No, but it's still pretty pretty red,
I used to
red,
live in
I
Marietta,
guess.
And I know it used to be Newt's district. It was when I lived there. Anyhow, what's on your mind today?
Well, it's not as bad as then, but, well, actually, I called initially about your comments on the Ukrainian history, and but then you asked about the Supreme Court arguments, and I don't know if it's allowed, but if I could say comment on both, but in terms of Ukraine, argument for people who, on the right or left, who are against giving support is simply that we promised it to them under Bush, a Republican president. So if you're in favor of the U.S. keeping its commitments and as well in favor of non-nuclear proliferation, this is the cost. We promised we would support them, and three countries did, England, U.S., Russia. Just so happens Russia is the one breaking the agreement and attacking them now. But that simple reason is from the history that we promised them we would defend them. And so I think that could be an argument that appeals to people on the peace side on the left, and also the MAGA crowd, unless they're going to say that Bush was an illegitimate president.
Yeah.
But
it was during Clinton. It was 94, I think, that the Budapest Accords were worked out. But in any case, yeah, we promised them that we would do this. The UK promised them that they would respect and defend the borders of Ukraine in exchange for Ukraine denuclearizing. And Russia promised them that. I mean, it's just, it's not an argument. Okay, what was the thing about the Supreme Court, real quick?
Well, they're kind of three different groups or three different arguments, you might say. One is actually the Missouri, it's lawyers who are not acting somehow directly for the Missouri loan servicing entity, because that's a state entity in Missouri. And so they're saying if the federal government forgives all these loans, the state of Missouri is going to lose money. But it's not directly Missouri entity that's suing. It's this group of lawyers somehow on behalf, so their standing is still being challenged, but that is the entity. The argument they're making. That's one side of it. And then another one is that because it's like so much money involved and touches so many million Americans, the Supreme Court, the conservative one, has developed this kind of large questions doctrine, that's a big deal, such a large amount of money, affecting so many Americans, it has to be specifically done by Congress, not an agency rule.
Right.
And so, but then again, standing comes up because, then a congressperson should be suing, but I can't imagine any congressman in their district would really want to be suing.
Right, or the House of Representatives itself should be suing. Yeah, excellent points. So, it's going to be really interesting to see how the arguments go, Patrick. Have you been following them?
Trying to and listening, trying. And then there's a group of other students who claim, my loan is not still being held by the federal government. It's held by some commercial agency, even though it was issued under the student loan program. So if your loan is being held by a commercial entity, then you don't qualify.
This is really about ideology, though. I mean, this is really about the Republicans saying that, if you borrowed money, you should pay it back, period, full stop, and there's nothing wrong with going in debt to go to college. And Democrats saying people shouldn't have to go into debt to go to college.
Unless you're, a business got that loan forgiveness under PPP or 08 under the rescue plans and so forth. But if you're a regular person,
die. Well, thank you, Patrick, for the information on standing on that. I do appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.